From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1792 in New York City. The Society of St. Tammany, or the Columbian Order, celebrated the 300th anniversary of Columbus's initial voyage. That celebration was the start of what eventually became an official federal holiday. During the late 1800s, Italian Americans began to attach more significance to the day, honoring not only Columbus's career, but Italian culture in general. Presidential proclamation ensured it would be a national holiday starting in 1937. In the past decade especially, there's been increasing pressure to recognize Indigenous Peoples Day, a direct rebuke to the celebration of Columbus, who caused mass death and suffering among Indigenous peoples. And here in Rochester, a committee led in part by Italian Americans has been exploring a question. How can we ensure that Italian Americans can have a holiday to honor their culture and heritage while respecting the concerns of Indigenous populations who see Columbus so differently? This hour, we meet people who have been working on an answer, and we'll discuss alternative ideas on this day, officially Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. And our guests include, in studio, Kathy Castagna is co-chair of the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee, member of the Italian Heritage Committee, chair of the Education Committee for SURGE, that's Showing Up for Racial Justice. Kathy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Evan. Glad to be here.
Also with us in studio is a professor in the Department of Philosophy at RIT, Professor Lawrence Torcello, whose family is from where? This is important. He was saying before the program, we're not just Italian Americans. You know your ancestral hometown.
Sure. We're very regional. So on my father's side, Valva, which is a mountainous village in Campania region, connected to the province of Salerno, and Villadomo, which in Sicily on my mother's side, connected to the province of Palermo.
I should have also asked Kathy the same. You probably know the answer.
I absolutely know it. I'm 100% Sicilian, and I've lived there in my grandparents' village, which was just such an honor. My grandfather was from Montedoro, which is in the region of Caltanissetta. Both grandmothers were from Serre di Falco, and my other grandfather was from San Stefano di Camastra in a different region in the north.
I should say I learned a good lesson when I was bicycling in a town called Lucca.
Oh yeah.
Years ago, and a group of women asked me to take a picture, and I said anything for Italian women, and they said, "We are not Italian, we are Sicilian."
Yes.
And I got quite a glare. I thought, okay, I'm learning a good lesson in regionalism and identity. Let me also welcome Ronnie Pollack from the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation Eagle Clan and Executive Director of the Native American Cultural Center. Ronnie, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, so Kathy, let me start with you because you're part of a committee that has been doing work. Can you take us back to when some of this work began and what the mission was? What kind of sparked all of this?
Thanks, Evan. That's a great question. In 1992, I actually wrote an op-ed piece for the Democrat and Chronicle called Rethinking Columbus. I was passionate about all of the critical thinking I was doing around why would Columbus be someone that represents such a beautiful culture that I come from? I had already visited Sicily, and it just felt wrong. I saw contradictions everywhere. So 2017, it took a while for me to get up the courage, I might add, to begin to talk with Indigenous people. So we began to have a conversation between myself and Indigenous people, and we said, let's do something, right? So we started to form a group called Indigenous Peoples Day Committee of Rochester. Italian Americans came on board, as well as other allies, Indigenous people. It's a great mix of folks from around Rochester whose goal was always to get legislation passed permanently to remove Columbus and substitute Indigenous Peoples Day for the second Monday of October. Now, Ronnie Pollack, who's on here, is now the co-chair of that committee with me, and great progress has been made. We've had a lot of stalls, fits and starts. We had a proclamation by the mayor in 2018, and that wasn't really what we wanted, I need to say, because it's not permanent. Proclamation is just a proclamation. It can go away at any time. But we saw it as a step and we just kept working. And so luckily right now we have some good movement toward possible legislation. I can't say exactly when, but I think it's going to happen.
You're more optimistic it's going to happen now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And just so I'm clear on a couple of other points, Kathy, I know you are aware of the spectrum of views that Italian Americans may have on Columbus and Columbus Day. And trying to, as faithfully as I can, sum them up, there's some who say, get over it. Columbus Day is the day. This is our day to celebrate. It's important to us. It's important for our heritage. There's some who say, I think, like you, there's something valuable in celebrating culture and heritage, and a holiday would be important. But let's think very carefully about the impact this has, particularly when we think about genocide and indigenous peoples, and maybe we can find a path forward that finds a different day, and a new way of celebrating. I think there are those who have said, sure, there should be Indigenous Peoples Day, just not on Columbus Day, and this has already been established. So I know you've heard all of those.
Yeah.
What are your conversations like when you encounter Italian Americans who sort of strongly feel, don't take away Columbus Day from us?
Yeah, it's got some deep roots. And the committee I'm in, the Italian Heritage Committee, talks about this a lot. These are our relatives. These are our sisters and brothers of Italian heritage. We're not disrespecting them in the work that we're doing. We're trying to actually call them in and not out. And we know it's going to take some healing. It's going to take lots of conversations and some conflict. We're not averse to that. And to recognize, though, that there are all those voices, that one kind of voice shouldn't be the voice that defines all of us, right? So, and I'm just going to share that we went through a process over the last year where we had these conversation circles of Italian Americans. And we brought in Italian Americans that were someplace on that spectrum, but not maybe the ones who really, really wanted to keep Columbus. We invited...
Kind of open... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so people open to trying to figure this out among us, and we got very deep into conversation about our family's histories, our values. What we learned about Columbus and what was surprising to all of us is that none of us had a strong emotional attachment to Columbus growing up. It was just a day off school. Now, one person in there said, I think it was pretty political. It seemed to be more something that businessmen would have a luncheon and want people to come and do all that, but not so much something that really reflected those values, right, that we hold dear, hospitality, love of family, generosity, all those things just didn't quite fit for many of us in those conversations. We talked about our values and said, he's almost having Columbus of a symbol for those beautiful values. It's like a contradiction. It's like a living contradiction for many of us. And so it felt like, and it would be for younger generations coming along, that they, as Italians, would say, wait a minute, these values I'm learning in my home, these beautiful values. And now I have this person whose history is complicated, let's just say, at the best, right? And it's filled with, like you just said, genocide and murder and not respecting families, not respecting those Taino families for sure. So why would we hand our children that contradiction? We don't want that contradiction, and we don't feel like our children really deserve that. Like, they need a space where they could come together, and that's what our committee believes. As we deconstruct Columbus in some fashion, I don't know what it'll look like, we would then be constructing something else closer to what we hold dear in our community.
A holiday that celebrates Italian heritage and culture but doesn't use that name?
Yes, and it wouldn't be one day. Our committee was really clear. We didn't want it to be Italian Heritage Day. We want the whole month. So October is Italian month, right? So we're like, wouldn't it be great? Every day we have another Italian American that represents those values, right? that we highlight, that we have, we come together and do those fun things that we do when we get together with our families and we invite others to come join us. We have great vision for what this could really look like. And we're just asking our fellow Italian Americans, those who believe the way we do, come on board. And those who don't, maybe come on board too, and we'll see what we can figure out, right? And I think it'll take a lot of healing, that when you, we lose something, we have to grieve it, right? We have to grieve that loss. So we need to provide a space for, if that is no longer going to be the symbol, then what does that feel like? And how do we hold that, right? And I really feel strongly about that. There's a lot psychologically that's going on here with Columbus. He was given to us in 1937. It was a depression. There was a eugenics movement. There was a nativist movement. There was a lot of rejection of Italian Americans. We needed something to help us have status, and especially around race. So we didn't feel comfortable in our race. We were someplace on that hierarchy that didn't feel so good, right? And so we wanted to find something that could securely put us into whiteness. That set us on this course where we're now not honoring other people of who are of color, not, you know, we were given whiteness. We're not honoring their struggle the way we honor our relatives and our ancestors' struggle. And I think Larry will talk a little bit about this, because we had a lot of struggle in Sicily, in Italy, and we came here, and now we've got this racial hierarchy construction that we're trying to establish.
Yeah, so let me just say, I want to turn to Ronnie Pollack now, but in a moment, I think Professor Torcello will do something for us that was, it was sort of new to me. A lot of the discussion about Columbus, appropriately so, is about genocide and about who are the heroes that we hold up and what does that mean? And what are we doing as a culture and as a society when we do that? But there's something different here. There was a real pain of discrimination and a escape of poverty and discrimination and an Italian-American story that I think a lot of people who don't know it or maybe not Italian-American might be surprised, but there's roots in that apart from the genocide issues that Professor Torcello thinks is really relevant if we're going to evaluate whether Columbus should be a hero or a model here. So we'll talk about that in just a second, but let me just ask Ronnie, you know, let me just start by asking you, when you hear the name Christopher Columbus, what conjures up in your mind first, Ronnie?
Yeah, I think it conjures up many different types of thoughts, and maybe, you know, some of them are probably best left unexpressed. But it really resembles, you know, this celebration of an individual that imposed incredible harm and violence, and really what ended up being an annihilation of a great portion of our people and life as we knew it, and knowing all that our ancestors had to endure in the violence. And, and sometimes, too, that reality and those truths are often not shared. You know, those aren't a part of the lesson. But anyway, I think that's what it represents for me. And so to know that there is a federal recognition with an entire holiday and an entire day that is devoted to, I guess, honoring this individual, it's very hurtful and it's very dismissive and, you know, very excluding of our people and all that we had to endure. So I think really briefly, yeah, that's kind of what it conjures up for me.
So, Ronnie, when you hear Kathy talking about the desire to establish Indigenous Peoples Day as the honored holiday, not a co-holiday, not sort of like a shared space with Columbus Day, but to replace it, while the committee then says, let's make October, you know, a month to celebrate Italian heritage and culture, and there's a number of things that they have in mind for that. Does that sound like the right kind of progress and compromise to you?
Yeah, it does. It does, because it's not about, you know, removing the recognition of one people while establishing, you know, recognition for another set of people. But it's, how do we celebrate both? How, you know, how do we be inclusive of all while not trying to eliminate or like I said, be dismissive of a certain people group? And so devoting that honor and that celebration to an Italian heritage, I mean, I'm all for that. There is an incredible amount that is steeped in our society, you know, as the United States of America, that has so much Italian roots tied to it and Italian heritage tied to it that I've come to love. You know, I celebrate, I partake in many different offerings, you know, that the Italian people have given to us and that have just naturally become a part of our everyday life. But you know, I think the honor in having a separate day for Indigenous Peoples Day that is only Indigenous Peoples Day and that is devoted to Indigenous Peoples Day is a move towards the right direction and a step in the right direction. And I believe that really needs to be in the scope of truth and reconciliation, you know, and making movement towards that, I feel like really, you know, starts to bring that to the surface.
And Ronnie, what did you make of the 2018 proclamation that Kathy talked about, which, you know, perhaps was ceremonial and, you know, sort of nice, but not permanent binding and not quite to the level of what some are calling for? What did you make of it?
Yeah, while it was great and I felt like it was perhaps a monumental moment and a definite step in the right direction, it still didn't lend itself in that permanent recognition. It was almost like something that was, I don't know, quote unquote, easy to do to pacify, you know, a desire from maybe a particular people group or even, you know, from our committee that was, you know, wanting to have this ask of coming from City Hall. But, you know, making our movements towards, since that time, towards a resolution, you know, to me, that really is much more representative of the reconciliation work that I think it has, you know, much more depth to it than maybe a proclamation does.
Are you an optimist like Kathy is that it's going to get done?
Yes. Yes, I am. I am for sure.
Professor Torcello, sometimes when I hear a defense of Columbus Day from Italian Americans, it starts with, we have been through so much. Let's not forget our history, the discrimination, the pain. And this holiday came along at a time for a reason, and we needed to celebrate and be respected in our culture and heritage. Let's start there, because history I know is important, and you write in a recent essay that indeed it is. Let's talk about that.
Thanks, Evan. And I just want to say quickly that I agree with everything your other guests have said so far. For me, one of the things that is wrong with Columbus Day is that it really is a distortion of history, and not just the history of Indigenous people, but it's also a distortion of the history of the immigrant groups that he's now been thrust upon and for, I think, political reasons, but also some understandable reasons in the 20th century. For instance, in the 30s, when the initial proclamation or annual proclamation was instituted, there was a immigration restriction on Italians. So that started in 1924 and it ended around 1965 when another immigration act repealed it. But that 1924 Immigration Act reduced Italian immigration by about 82%. And between 1880 and 1924, 4.5 million Italian immigrants, mostly from southern Italy, arrived. And they were met with great bigotry, xenophobia.
Sometimes violence.
Violence, lynchings. And so it's understandable, I think, that people who are facing those sorts of ordeals are ready to grasp on to any figure that they think will help them become more accepted in their new home. That being said, Columbus has no authentic or legitimate connection to the vast majority of Italian immigrants, not only in our personal histories and our families. So many of us share this upbringing where Columbus wasn't part of any conversation, where he was nothing to us other than a day off of school. But the history of Italy also shows that Columbus isn't really part of the Italian immigration experience of that first 1880 to 1924 wave, because most of those people were coming from southern Italy and Sicily soon after the unification of Italy in 1961, and they were fleeing conditions of near starvation in many cases, great destitution, illiteracy, and the conditions that they were fleeing were in part set by several hundred years of being a subjugated Spanish land. So the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, for much of its history, or recent history, I should say, certainly from Columbus to the 19th century, was influenced as a client state of Spain. And this begins with the very sponsors of Columbus. So King Ferdinand and Isabel are in control of Sicily, and they're the ones who bring the Inquisition to Sicily, which reduces a very vibrant, diverse, in many ways cosmopolitan culture on the island to a Catholic monoculture. And it really, as I write, it throttles the culture of Sicily in many ways, and carrying over into the southern end of the peninsula. And so the only real connection to southern Italian and Sicilian people is that Columbus helped to strengthen and enrich the very forces of foreign oppression that the ancestors of many Italian Americans today were actually trying to escape. And so it doesn't make any sense from a historical perspective for us to now look to Columbus as a representative of our history. In fact, what he is a part of the erasure of those Italian immigrants who were not welcome on their arrival in the United States. Columbus didn't represent those immigrants. He represented an idealized European figure. And he was offered in stark contrast to the destitute immigrants that were arriving at the time. And so the fact that none of us had anything to do with Columbus in our upbringing, and that Italians are so very regional, and we have such rich and diverse regional cultures, the fact that we would all, in some sense, feel that Columbus, who is perhaps, maybe, though it's debated, born in the Republic of Genoa, which was an independent northern republic at the time, and then represented Spanish imperialism, that he would somehow represent our heritage, it's nonsense. It's something that is an artifact of politics and desperation in the 20th century, while a people were really being met with hardships. And so it's part of the Italian-American experience that gets erased there, too.
I found this work that you wrote, this piece that you wrote, so interesting in that it's the first, and only because I probably haven't paid close enough attention, but it's the first and most compelling case that I've seen that says, apart from genocide, this is a bad representative for Italian-American culture. The Italian-American and the Italian immigrants who came to this country to escape oppression were oppressed by the likes of which Columbus participated in and supported and represented and benefited from. You know, we don't have a King George's Day, I don't think. Maybe we do. But the bottom line is, this is not the rep. This is not the person who represents your cooking, your culture, your heritage, your hard work, the sacrifice. He's the opposite.
And if I may, two things. One, if you really want to, well first, actually, I agree, obviously, and I just want to put it out there, that genocide is bad, too, right? So this doesn't take away from that.
We are talking apart from the genocide while acknowledging. I'm glad you make this clarification, but I mean, I think it should be, I hope it should be obvious, but yes.
Sure. That's also a concern of mine. I want to be clear. But also, if you want to really challenge your Italian American friends as to their cultural link to Columbus, ask them which traditional meal their nona served up on Columbus Day. And if they say that they have one, I bet they're making it up.
Kathy, you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is no memory attached to that day in my family. And there were great holidays and fun stuff, but not that day. And I had a thought, because sometimes I think my ancestors are pushing me forward. Ronnie and I talk about this a lot because, you know, we feel like sometimes our ancestors are calling from that place. After I went to Sicily 8 times, I really got the depth of the suffering that Larry just talked about. I mean, we're talking suffering. It was close to enslavement there. A lot of fundias, sulfur mines in our village, it was sulfur mines. And these little boys, the Carusi, were the ones that were like totally sold to those mines because parents were so poor, right? I mean, it just breaks my heart, the stories I heard there. So indeed, we were suffering. There's no doubt about it. And so I sometimes feel like those voices from the past are saying that suffering should not be forgotten, and it shouldn't be forgotten because other people are also suffering, and we have to recognize that we can't be a part of that other side that is doing that to people. We were never that. We weren't that. We were the ones that were just the group at the bottom, right? And so I feel that like any inheritance. So we inherited Columbus, right? Now, when my mother died, I inherited a whole lot of stuff. I inherited furniture. I inherited photos. I inherited books and greeting cards and all this stuff. Some of that stuff just didn't have any meaning for me anymore, right? I had to let it go. I don't want that stuff in my life. It doesn't signify my love for my mother. But there were other things that did, that represented the values I was taught in my home. One of those actually was a photo of my great-grandmother, a very courageous, compassionate woman. By all the stories, I've never met her, but I heard amazing stories. When I look at that photo in my house, I learn a value, right? That symbol, so those symbols are important, and those things we inherit, we got to look through them and say, some of these things I could let go of. And I sort of see that around Columbus as well. Yeah, we might have inherited them. And we might have inherited them for some people from people they loved. It doesn't end the love to let go of the thing, right? Like we could still love those people who might have passed that on to us and still say, I don't want that, right, in my life. So I guess I think sometimes we just need to go through that hard work of healing. I mean, Reshma Menachem, who I think is a brilliant writer about white trauma, and he talks about when white people came into this country, we came out of tremendous trauma in Europe, you know, and that it's our job now to go back and look at that and to heal that trauma so that we can be partners with BIPOC people, so that we can truly be there and not be given this hierarchy that sometimes made us feel better about ourselves. I can tell you in my home, we hated what a Mattakani did to us. My father would speak very loudly. They discriminate. They did this. They did that. In the next breath, Evan, he would talk about Black and brown people in horrific ways. That did not make sense to me. If we didn't like it, why would we do it to somebody else? Right?
Yeah. Mm.
But if you think about how this is set up, maybe it gave him a little bit of feeling a little better than somebody else, right? We're at least not there. And I just wonder if sometimes unconsciously, I'm not saying people are necessarily consciously doing this, and I don't think my parents necessarily did it out of that, but I do think it works that way when you have a system that assigns status to people based on their race and their ethnicity. We're, you know, we're given just try to get some status, folks. So Columbus gave us some status. And it was that feel good. Oh, I'm going to feel good. I'm going to feel better about myself, even though all these things are happening.
Well, after we take our only break of the hour, I want to ask Ronnie Pollack about something that comes to mind for me when I think about the fact that I struggle with the fact that the genocide wasn't enough to detach from a holiday. That's my bias here. And I'll put that on the table. But I always want to listen. I always want to understand people's perspectives and understand if, for those who are holding on tight to something. But I think there is something representative of something more than just some of the Italian-American experience. And I want to talk about that with Ronnie on the other side of this break here. We're talking about Columbus Day and what it means, Indigenous Peoples Day, and the effort to maybe find something different, something detached from Christopher Columbus, but actually honoring, not just sort of get rid of the Columbus name and keep doing it, what we're doing. I think what Professor Torcello and Kathy Castagni are talking about is actually sort of reminding us of the real trauma and suffering that people from parts of Italy, or what is now Italy, have gone through and endured and worked very hard to overcome. That is not really represented by Columbus, but that experience was tough. And then to encounter bigotry and hatred and violence and legal discrimination and so much more here, many of us either don't know that or have already forgotten that. So this effort actually brings that back to mind and brings more solidarity with people who've been oppressed and are currently oppressed. So it's just a very interesting way of thinking about things with Professor Lawrence Torcello from RIT, Ronnie Pollack from the Native American Cultural Center, Kathy Castagna from, among other things, the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee. She's a member of the Italian Heritage Committee. Let's take that break and we'll continue the conversation right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we hear from police chiefs in different states, in different cities, talking about women in law enforcement. What would it mean to departments like Rochester's, like any department, to have more women in police? What would the impact be on public safety? We'll hear those perspectives Tuesday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Pam in Newark, hang on the line for 1 second, and then I've got some emails to read, but before we do that, Ronnie Pollack, the executive director of the Native American Cultural Center. One of the things that comes to mind for me in this conversation, I mean, I think we'd be farther down the road here if there weren't some Italian Americans who don't currently still say, get over it. You know, this is our day and it's important to us. And so the way my mind sort of cycles through this, it starts with what Professor Torcello has been talking about. If you just think about Columbus and what he represented, I mean, he was part of the oppression. He wasn't part of your grandparents' heritage of hard work and overcoming bigotry and oppression. And I mean, so there's that. So then it's like, then how could you possibly try to erase the genocide? Like, why would you even do that? But I feel, Ronnie, like we are at a time. We look at teaching. We look at classrooms. We look at the way politically we're so divided about how much we can teach. It's almost like there's an embarrassment and a shame that, you know, some white people in this country feel about our history, that the easiest thing to do is to say either, oh, you're overstating it, or it didn't happen, or that's past. I didn't do it. So get over that. And I feel like that's part of this. I think it's inevitable that it must be. I don't know what else explains the decision to just ignore something like that, Ronnie. But I feel like that's part and parcel with this ongoing debate about how much we teach and how uncomfortable we are of teaching native dispossession, Columbus and genocide, racism, slavery, et cetera. How do you see it? Do you see it as part of all that, Ronnie?
Yeah, I certainly do. I mean, those mistruths that exist, unfortunately, but when they are taught and when they are learned, and like you mentioned, when we're in a time right now where much of this is starting to rise to the surface and people are becoming more aware, guilt and shame are very powerful, right? And it's very hard for us as individuals, no matter who we are, to open up and make room for that and say, oh, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take that on. I'll accept that. So what sometimes is easier to do is to project, right? To just try to find another way to get rid of that, you know, whether it is through projection or whether it's through dismissal or whether it's through further divide, whatever it is, that is, I think, the easier route. So while it's, I don't know. I mean, in a way, I feel like it's great that all of these truths are finally rising to the surface and people are becoming more aware. I think we have to understand, too, it's going to take time to kind of work through some of this, because you have to work through that that human behavior response, you know, that I think is existent for all of us. And as you know, there are many people that begin to learn things that they had never learned before. There's even like, you know, some feelings of betrayal there and embarrassment. And, well, gosh, how do I take that on? And so, again, you know, it's not always easier. It's not always our human nature to just kind of open it up and accept that. So, you know, like I say, you know, projection is easier. But you know, we know that so many of those mistruths have been embedded mm-hmm. in our mm-hmm. history, in mm-hmm. our history books, in our lessons, in, you know, all of that we have just all come to accept as truth. So to, you know, put truths out there, I don't want to say messaging because it's not messaging, but to put truths out there that really challenge that. You know, I mean, I think we're just seeing the manifestation of how challenging that is for the human spirit, the human psyche, you know, to really kind of endure and begin to make room for. But I'm hopeful, you know, I always carry this persistence of hope, and the glass is half full, you know, have some of that optimism that in time, you know, as we make allowances and as we make more room for teaching what is behind these mistruths and having an understanding and having people come together collectively, even like Kathy had mentioned previously, even holding some of those conversation circles, you know, that's where we begin to come together in understanding and maybe even understanding how do we begin to move forward.
And let me just ask the professor on the panel about this too. I think there is something very human about the way some people might feel hesitant to kind of grapple with just how dark some parts of our history have been. I'm not like above that or belittling that, especially if, let's say, you grow up as a white American with very little education about some of this. Because we know the educational system leaves a lot of that out. And then as you grow into your adulthood, some of these things come into your attention, your consciousness. Inevitably, I think some non-zero percentage of people would just deny outright that it happened or that it was that bad. And then I think some other non-zero number of people would say, don't blame me, that was years ago. I think those are very human reactions. I'm not sort of... you know, I'm not necessarily kind of feeling great about them, but I mean, I understand the human condition is probably, it's not surprising. It's just that when it's in the classroom, we've got so many teachers, a lot of K through 12 especially, who don't want to grapple with this either. And there's legislation being passed to not be able to teach some of it. Then I don't know what, you know, sort of where we go next if we're not going to grapple honestly with it. Because I think we can grapple honestly in a way that is tough, loving, and honest. But I think some people don't feel like we can. And I think that's at the heart of this. What do you think?
Yeah. I think what helps is to see, and this I think will sound like a platitude maybe, but to look at other people and see them first as a fellow human being. And we all have our unique histories. And the only way to get to the heart of what the other person in front of you is about is to open up a dialogue with them and be open to disagreement. It sounds like the simplest thing in the world, but we have to be willing to divest ourselves from the ego investment in being right all the time. We just have to be Socratic about it. I suppose that's my bias as a philosophy professor. But if we could learn to be more Socratic about things and just willing to talk to people, I think that would go a long way. We've sort of lost that. And part of it is that we're so obsessed now with, for lack of a better term, identity politics. And it happens on the right and the left. And that becomes a poison that further separates us from each other. When we don't see the other human being, we just see a representative of a class or a race.
Especially when it's a class
or
a race
politics.
Or a group that we've determined is bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. 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 Kathy, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I do. I do a lot of work on whiteness and how whiteness got constructed around us. Like, none of us created this. Our parents didn't create it. Our grandparents didn't create it. It got created around us. So in my work, I never start with shaming and blaming anybody. We just got all put into this mess, right? And now our job is to think about, you know, how do we envision something outside of that? Like, how do we continue to deconstruct one thing and construct something else? Like, what would that vision look like? And it's amazing how people are able to really see that we can do that, that we can make something better for ourselves. So I just want to say that getting people through that thing that Larry just described is really a process where people need to be honored and treated with dignity as we're going through it. Calling people in and not out is really a critical piece of it. And so it's work. It's work, but it's good work. And I think we all can come to a place of that way that we see each other that Larry just described, of empathy and caring. Shame, by the way, takes empathy away. So when we shame people, we're actually not increasing their empathy for another human being. It's a hurt, right? And so the less we do the shaming and the more we just call people in and say, hey, we all got put into this, right? We didn't ask for it and it happened.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add there, Professor, before I jump on the phone there?
I just wanted to say, with regard to whiteness, part of this is an immigration story. Mm-hmm. And it's worth people thinking about how malleable the concept of whiteness is. And I think that one of the things we have to honor in honoring an Italian immigrant heritage is also current immigration. And look at those waves of immigrants that perhaps the U.S. is thinking through right now as not so different than our grandparents. And to just think about how concepts of whiteness and race change for whatever political or cultural reasons come up. I think that's useful to help us think through current problems.
Pam in Newark on the phone. Go ahead, Pam.
Hi. I like what he said about grandparents. My grandfather came from Sicily in 1893. And he was very, very dark-skinned. And if you look at the history of Italy and different regions, there were Turks and Arabian people mixed into the culture. So, and he used to work in the sewers in Waterloo. And Columbus Day, for me, was... you go to church, and the Knights of Columbus are there, and there's a mass, and that was Columbus Day. I have the idea that we should move, this is just my opinion, we should move Italian American Day to a week earlier on the 4th, which is St. Francis of Assisi Day. And there's nothing to, he loved animals, he loved people, my father was born near his birthday, near that day, and his name was Francis. You know, my grandmother was Italian, but she was born in America. So that was just my thoughts.
Thank you, Pam. Let me just ask the panel briefly. Kathy, what do you make of that?
Oh, I love that story, Pam. I love that you have that story of your father and grandfather, and just imagining that, you know, we were and we do represent a mixed race group, right? I mean, when I went to Sicily, they just said, oh, yeah, that's who we are. See that one over there? He's really dark, got curly hair. That one over there is blonde and blue-eyed. That's us, right? They just took that from this understanding of who we were. It was only when we came into a country that was racially divided so strictly with Jim Crow and all that, that we had to try to navigate race, right, and figure that one out. So thank you for that story, Pam. And yes, let's think about a different day. I love this. We'll join our committee and put it in the hopper. We're open for everything right now is what we can do.
So. Professor, what did you make of that call?
Yeah, I thank you, Pam. I also want to add a little more about the diversity. I think this is a really important point. The ethnic, or for lack of a better term to use, or cultural diversity of Sicily, but not just Sicily, but all of southern Italy, the two Sicilies, with Byzantine, Arabic, Norman, Greek. Sicily was an Arab island longer than modern Italy has existed as a unified nation. And I think a lot of people are surprised when they learn that, but it's worth keeping in mind again in terms of the diversity and the cosmopolitanism, which is a greater part, I think, of a legitimate cultural heritage than the monoculture that we see and the identification with somebody like Columbus.
Can I just talk a little bit about solidarity before this is up here? That was the term that came up in our brief break and something that I think our guests have raised. And Ronnie Pollack, do you feel that indigenous peoples can find solidarity with, even Italian Americans who think about their ancestors who were sometimes horrifically mistreated? Should there be solidarity in that regard, or do you think it's different?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I believe there can be solidarity. And even I think it's represented in the relationship and friendship that Kathy and I have forged in co-chairing the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee, that we have found that our histories and the stories of our ancestors, there is so much more that we have in common that we don't, that would otherwise, make us different. It's like, wow, we're, like I think Kathy always says, not only is it for Indigenous people, but it's also to bring honor and recognition to many of those atrocities that Italians, specifically Sicilians, had suffered and endured, that were, very similar and shared this commonality with some of our sufferings as well, too, that many people are, completely unaware of. Yeah.
Is there any surprise in you, Ronnie, that is there ever a day where you think, is it like October rolls around and do you ever find yourself thinking, hey, Italian Americans, we could find so much solidarity given what your ancestors experienced here, and instead you're elevating the guy who literally caused genocide against Indigenous peoples. Does that ever come up to you?
I mean, maybe not verbatim that way, but yeah, roughly very similar, because I mean, my heart really is wanting and desiring for all Italian Americans to have their own recognition, but it not be tied to this person that represents such incredible genocide and violence and harm and annihilation of a particular people, of Indigenous people. No, there is so much more beauty to your culture and to your people that deserves to be celebrated and deserves to be celebrated unattached from this one individual.
Before we lose the hour, Kathy, just remind people what you'd like to do next with the committee's work here, because you mentioned, you've said, hey, join the committee if you've got ideas. And it's not a fully formed, it's not a done deal yet. What actually comes out of the work that you've been doing, that you and Ronnie and so many others have been doing, what do you think is coming next year?
So our committee is thinking very well about how do we reach out to other Italian Americans on that whole spectrum that you described. And, you know, how do we do that sensitively? How do we do that in a caring way that really reflects those deep values we've talked about here? So we're all getting better at that. We're learning on how to do that. Another thing is that we're inviting people in with all their ideas. Like, I loved what Pam said. Who knows? We're thinking maybe the first Saturday of October can be the big celebration, but then honoring all these other Italian Americans. I mean, we have amazing people from Rochester. Jerry Mangione, to me, was this author exemplar. He wrote so much about our culture. And it's given me a lot of pride in who I am. So why not honor people like that? Like, that would be wonderful. So there's a lot, and we just invite other Italian Americans out there to join us. Somehow, if we can get in touch through you, Evan,
sure,
it would be wonderful. And also to join the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee, because a lot of great work is being done there. And we need a lot of hands on deck.
I know we've Americanized Mangione, but whenever I heard, you know, Gap or Chuck, I always said Mangione until somebody said it's Mangione. So there's been a lot of Americanization over the years. Names have changed. But I'm grateful for this conversation. Kathy Castagna, co-chair of the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee and member of the Italian Heritage Committee, among other roles in the community, thank you for being here. And the co-chair, Ronnie Pollack, from the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation Eagle Clan, the executive director of the Native American Cultural Center. Ronnie, we always appreciate your time.
Thank you, Evan.
And Professor Lawrence Torcello from the Department of Philosophy at RIT will share his recent essay on this if you want to take a look on our various platforms. Thanks for being here, Larry.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right, from the whole crew here on this first day of our fall membership campaign, we hope you're a member of and support public radio. We'll talk to you tomorrow.